Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast, another emergency edition. It's been a few weeks. I haven't even done a Ryder Cup podcast here. I did one on Shane Ryan's podcast last week, but I know you guys are probably ready for some Ryder Cup takes. I'm ready for some Ryder Cup takes. I'm ready to talk about the big news that broke today. Tiger Woods has officially announced his probable return at the Safeway Open. Rory McIlroy has won his first PGA Tour event of the season. Here with us to help break it down. Finally, 52 episodes in. We've talked about this for a long time. Managing editor at swingbyswing.com, Chris Chaney. You know him as Wrong Fairway, at Wrong underscore Fairway on Twitter. Chris, what's going on today, man?
Hey, Solid. Good to be here.
Are you as jacked up about the Tiger news as I am? I mean, first of all, I'm overstating how jacked up I am. We knew he was going to come back. I thought he was going to wait until the hero, but are people justified to be as excited as they are today?
I mean, I think so. I mean, this morning when I'm sitting there, I got Tiger on text alert for his Twitter on my phone. I'm such a fanboy, and I was sitting there, I think I was on the phone with my wife buying Bengals gear for the opener on Sunday. She had me on FaceTime looking at Bengals stuff, and I got a text and almost kind of just like jumped out of my chair and started running around in circles, hung up on her on accident. It was just full fanboy.
That was not on accident. You can be honest here. This is a safe place.
Well, I needed the people needed to know what I thought, so I got on Twitter and said something ridiculous like Tiger's back or something that was completely meaningless. But
I think you and I were the only ones to tweet anything in anywhere close to that. So I think that it was well worth hanging up on your wife for. I would say.
Yeah, she understands.
Yeah, if she knew it was related to the Big Cat, she would have to, and she knows who she's married to. Then I think. That's exactly what she signed up for. So no, Mrs. Chaney, sorry, I don't feel bad for you in this scenario. What are we expecting from Tiger when he comes back? Again, he said he hopes to return Safeway October 13th. I don't like to talk too much Tiger, but we've waited over a year for this. I think it's very fair game to start talking about it. So do you see this as kind of a, look, I'm going to play a little bit in the off season. He knows he's going to get a ton of attention on it, but is this kind of a ploy to keep his sponsors happy, to make it look like he's working towards a comeback, or do you think he's really ready to, I'm not going to say win, but I would say like at least be competitive and make cuts at professional golf tournaments again?
I mean, do you remember Augusta? We were on like bated breath waiting to see if he was going to play in Augusta in April. That there was even rumors out there that he was considering it then makes you think this is the safe play and he should be at least somewhat capable of putting something together. But after kind of that initial, you're kind of going crazy, running around circles in your living room, you kind of think, like, when was the last time we saw Tiger? It's the Wyndham from last year. And then what happened before that? It was like he was blasting people in Phoenix from the bunker. And it's kind of like, it's almost like a little reality check. Like, we get the Tiger Tuesdays from Sarson, we get your thing on 15 from Augusta where he's hitting balls to 3 feet for eagle. And then you realize that's not the Tiger we left, and it's kind of just like, what are we going to get? It's scary as a Tiger fan, but it's really exciting just to kind of have him back and at least have something new to kind of think about instead of worrying about him showing up at Sam's career day.
See, for me, the Wyndham, like, restored a lot, right? Because, I mean, like, I don't know about you, in 2010, 2011, when he went through that horrible spell, I had written him off. I was done with him. Like, he's never going to be the same again, blah, blah, blah. And he came back in 12 and 13 and had excellent seasons. I think it was player of the year one of those years, won eight times, etc. And I vowed to never count him out again. And I never panicked in 2014. I just said, you know, he'll snap out of it. He never really did. And then 2015, he played well at the Masters, and that was pretty much it until he was tied for the lead going into the final round of the Wyndham last year. And that was, to me, kind of like my moment again to be like, don't ever, ever, ever count this guy out. But part of me thinks, and I don't have the, I don't know, obviously I'm not hanging out with Tiger playing Call of Duty with him, but I just get the impression from what I've been reading and people close to him, I just don't think he's working that hard. Do you think that's a fair statement to make?
I think it's a an evolution for him. I think it's been kind of talked about a lot. You hear his boy Noda talking about the evolution of him as a father, him as a an ex-husband, whatever you want to call it. It's just the evolution of his life has taken on a different path than he kind of came out thinking it would. And I mean, like you mentioned, the Wyndham, he hits that flop shot and holds it. It's just like, there's vintage Tiger. He's back. And I think we're always going to have those glimpses every once in a while, just because he's Tiger and he's just supremely talented and better than pretty much anybody else who's picked up a club in the last 20 years. So we're going to get glimpses from him. It's just a matter of if he can hold it together. That's the whole thing from when he was kind of teasing us a little bit. He couldn't put four rounds together. He couldn't play on the weekends at majors. He couldn't chip the ball. And then it's just a matter of, does he work that hard? Probably not as much as he was, because he's not a singular focus anymore. He has his two kids that, by all accounts, he's the best, one of the best fathers in the world, if you ask his buddies. So he's father of the year every year, Tiger. And then he's chipping in his backyard, and he falls over, and he has to have his daughter come out and call for help because he's paralyzed on the ground or whatever. So I think the notion that he's not working as hard is probably a fair one and an understandable one, but it doesn't mean, I don't think, that we're not going to get the glimpses of Tiger, even the weeks of great vintage Tiger. I just don't think the 8 wins, the 10-win seasons are ever going to come back, which is not necessarily surprising. I don't think anybody thought he could hold that standard for the rest of his life. It's just, I mean, sports, it just doesn't work that way. But that we completely write him off, I think, is a little premature, just knowing kind of what he showed us in the past. But to be cautiously optimistic, I don't think it's too far off base.
I want to clarify my statement here about saying that I think he can at least come back. Is I think his absolute highest ceiling is what we saw in 2012, 2013, right? I mean, the free-swinging Tiger of the early 2000s and even late 90s, like even into the late 2000s, is not ever coming back. It's a completely different golf swing. His body is not capable of swinging it the way he did there. But the way he retooled his swing under Foley and was still able to be successful under a swing that I think really, really limited him, I just think that the fact that he's shown his ability to do it with so many different swings makes me think that I don't want to ever fully count him out. The thing that was just so scary last year was how bad his bad shots were. Like the shots you don't see any professional golfers hit, blading the ball all over the place, chunking shots at the Hero, I think that was in 2014, and then topping three woods at the U.S. Open. I mean, that was just so unbelievably bad that you just wonder, like, he just has to be. I mean, when I take time off golf, I maybe will hit one top three wood every 3 months, but my name's not Tiger Woods. So I just think that, he's lowered the ceiling so high. I'm not ruling out that he can get there. Obviously, the deck is kind of stacked against him, but I mean, it's gonna be interesting to watch. It definitely is. Even if he's around making cuts, that's infinitely more exciting than him being on the sidelines. Would you agree?
Oh, I think without a doubt.
Yeah,
I mean, we're talking about 2013. He won 5 times, played 16 tournaments that year.
Jeez,
it's ridiculous. It's like that. Even that, it's like 5 times. It's like whatever. Tiger, he won like what, 7 or 8 in a row at one point in his career. But you think about this shit. I mean, it's Tiger Woods, and then he's never going to do that to the early around the turn of the century kind of stuff. He's not going to be swinging, be hitting these ridiculous cut swings that are not necessary when you hit him in the first place. His body just literally can't handle it. So, I mean, I don't think I think we get a different Tiger. I think it's kind of the evolution we were hoping for. Tiger post scandal was more of a guy who's a little under control, who's going to use his skill and experience to kind of plot his way around a golf course, as opposed to just overpowering it. Just by virtue of there's people who can hit it further than him, but they don't outthink him. No one outthinks Tiger, and that was kind of his whole thing. And that's one of the things that we always kind of wondered when he was coming back, is how is his mental state? Is he available, or is he able to kind of use what he knows around Augusta? Obviously, it's shown how he can do that, and just other places he can use his experience to kind of make up for the shortcomings that come with age, injury, and all the other stuff. I think it's just a matter of, we need to be, as fans and kind of people who love the game, we need to lower our expectations, just because when somebody leaves for a while, you don't think about kind of Jordan on the Wizards but you think about, maybe if you think of Jordan on the Wizards, you think of that two-hand block he had off the back where he just picked it off. That's the only thing you remember from that. You don't remember him kind of just like sitting on the bench with Gerald Henderson or something like that, or Richard Rip Hamilton. But
I will say, I think I hope it Jordan with the Wizards is a realistic, like, I actually made this that point like back in 2014, whenever he had his last comeback, whatever it was. People don't remember how good Jordan was with the Wizards, like at age 39 and 40. Like, when he was 40, he played 82 games and averaged like 20 a game or something like ridiculous like that. So I think, I know that wasn't your overall point, but if we get like Jordan with the Wizards out of Tiger, I'll be pretty happy with that, I think. Like, you know, competing here and there and still being a top player in the game despite being overage. I mean, golf is a game where you can play. Like, Phil's going to turn 50 in about 3 years or so, and he's, you know, still putting up one of the best five potential major performances of all time this year. Like, the life of a golfer is very long. I know he's got a lot of health issues to make us think that it'll be different for him. But, I mean, who's to say he won't be healthy in 6 years from now and still playing well? I don't know. I just think that there's so much time left still. There's a lot of scar tissue there, literally and figuratively. But, yeah, I mean, we're going to do the whole circus again. We're going to be live tweeting this practice rounds, and we're gonna, when he gets to two under, we're gonna freak out, and when he bogeys two in a row, we'll freak out. So it'll be fun. It'll be fun.
Yeah, cameras at parking spots, all that other good stuff.
What I didn't understand was people saying today, like a few people saying, like, "Oh, look, like, I'm sure announce this now and overshadow the Ryder Cup." It's like, okay, would you rather have waited closer to the Ryder Cup or right after when he's got like 10 days before he needs to be there? Like, I don't understand people criticizing the timing of the announcement.
Yeah, the question becomes now, does he play in the Ryder Cup Captain's Challenge? See if we can fawn over him a little bit early and see if we can get some stuff from him there. But, I mean, the thought that he's overshadowing the Ryder Cup is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, they make the picks next Monday. That'll kind of restart the whole Ryder Cup cycle. This is kind of a perfect timing. So what he overshadows the first round of the BMW tomorrow. It's a Thursday. Start to a tournament that's the same night as the NFL kicks off. If anybody's paying attention to golf, as is, that's a blessing for the PGA Tour.
Who's going to write the column that the headline, like, you thought Jim Furyk was going to be the captain's pick, or the assistant captain that was going to be the captain's pick. Now a new candidate emerges. My column, Tiger Woods for captain.
You're going to write that.
I already started it, yeah. So. All right, I think we'll talk a little bit about Tiger with the Ryder Cup in a second, but I want to first also debrief. Huge week, geez. Monday, Deutsche Bank Championship, Rory McIlroy, final round, 65, I believe, 600 par for his first win of the season. Of course, he's putted like he's on the deck of the Titanic the entire season. Ryder Cup month rolls along, 3 weeks out, and he catches fire with a new putter, and the U.S. team's now doomed again. We'll talk about Ryder Cup in a second, but I mean, wouldn't it be kind of ironic, or I don't know if ironic's the right word, but if this is the year that Rory finally wins the FedEx Cup, when it's not been his best season, and he's had some incredible seasons where it's kind of gotten taken from him at the Tour Championship. I know people don't really care about who is the FedEx Cup champion, but I couldn't help but think, like, wow, could this be the year that Rory comes out of nowhere to win this thing? And when it would look like it was a season that was not lost by any means, but definitely one of his, the way he looks at it, with zero wins, one of the weaker seasons. So, what do you have any big major takeaways from seeing Rory come back and run Paul Casey down on the final day?
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for Tiger, I'd be the biggest Rory fan. I just think his best is so good, and you and I saw it up close at Memorial earlier this year. Just watching him, the effortless power he puts to the ball, and then it's the putting with him. He's been a streaky putter, and it works, and he wins. But it seems like now he's got, with Phil Kenyon, his new putting coach, it seems like they, I don't know if it's something that's a harbinger for what's to come, but it's obviously a good start. But just Rory, he's just so talented. It's amazing. That's kind of what you keep hearing about. He has a new putting coach, and he puts it all, and it clicks 1 week right away. And he comes out and says he's trying to get this figured out by Augusta next year. He wins 3 days later. just him hitting that, almost holing out for Albatross on Sunday, and then just coming after Casey from six back. And I mean, by the time he made the turn, he was tied for the lead with a little help from Casey, obviously. But still, he picked up six shots or five shots, whatever it was, by that time. So, I mean, of course, like you said, it happens just right now in the middle of Ryder Cup lead up season, and then he wins, like you said, another tournament here, either this week or in 2 weeks at Atlanta. and he's got $10 million more to throw towards that wedding.
Secret wedding. We never hear anything about his relationship anymore. I wonder if that's by design, but I think you mentioned it when you said that we saw it up close and personal at a memorial this year, and I've always had a big man crush on Rory. I think we kind of all have. And I don't really know how to describe it. I think you and I tried to talk about it when we were there. Like, the ball just felt like it was on a string for him. And I forget what he shot that day. I think it was 68 or 67. Did it without really being able to even putt that day. But and he didn't even look that pleased with the way he was hitting the ball. And I've never really seen somebody just be in that much control. He didn't hit it that high. Just the ball just had this soft little draw to it. He had a drive off 17 that I'm not sure it's on camera. Just the club twirl he threw at that ball, and it went like 380 yards or something. And I don't know. I just became mesmerized. He stood out the most between JT, Spieth, and him that day, I think, to both of us. And I don't know. I feel like I kind of lost faith in him there for a while, and just kind of wondered when we would really see him come back. I know his 2014 year, he had like a really fluky good wedge year, and just kind of thought, like, did we see like a way better side of him than we're ever going to see again? But I mean, did this win change any of your thoughts on him, or were just kind of like, all right, now finally he's back?
It's almost like you think he's going to turn into a Stenson type, but like, I mean, a more talented Stenson, if you will. He's like you said, he hits the ball so pure and so far and so straight. It's unbelievable. And if you just, like Stenson, that Troon, if you put it together on the greens for a day or two even, you can overcome. Even I think Stenson had 2 days at Troon where he was negative strokes game putting. And then he goes out and goes unconscious on Sunday and just crushes Phil's soul. And, I mean, I think Rory can do that just because he out ball strikes people so often. If he gets anything, a stroke a day on the greens, and he's... It's like Hideki Matsuyama and Sarsen when he talks about if Hideki can ever putt once 1 week for 4 days or even 2 days out of four, he's gonna lap field just because he hits it so well. But Rory, I think, is the total package, and obviously when he gets hot, he gets super hot, and he's not scared to kind of go low, like Furyk low, your boy.
My boy, making a transition there. I think. I think one other note. I'm trying to find a tweet that I saw on it. I don't remember what it was, but Jason Day has given up shots to the field off the tee in each of the last two events. I think it's unfair if I was like, are we calling the end of the Jason Day era? I think it was only natural for him to come down for the whatever 7-8 month stretch that he had. It was just out of this world. But I guess his season's going to be. We're more concerned about American and European players at this point, this being a Ryder Cup year, and there will be only two events left in the year. But is that cause for concern, in your opinion, anything that you're seeing out of Jason Day lately?
No, I mean, I think it was Kyle Porter who put up the stat about his strokes gained putting, that he's the guy second in strokes gained putting is closer to whoever's in 25th than they are to Jason Day.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, and that's kind of the Spieth thing. I know you're a big truther on... Well, obviously, it's truth, so that he's not nearly the poor ball striker that people like to make him out to be. But the fact that he can kind of save some rounds or cobble together something where he's not on with the putter is kind of the great equalizer. And I know the strokes gained kind of bear out the truth of how important the long game is, but there's still truth to... One hot round can save a poor ball striking round as long as the ball striking kind of comes back. So I don't think it's anything to be too concerned about. I don't think it's worry about Jason Day switching teachers or anything like that, obviously, with Cole Swatton and stuff in their relationship. So I don't know if he can kind of maintain that level he had. It was really a historic level that he was on for the last couple months and going back to last year. So I don't know if that how realistic it is to believe that he can maintain that, but to think that he can't get back to that level, at least semi-regularly, I think is not giving him the credit he deserves.
Somebody pointed this out to me today. I posted a mailbag with Ryder Cup questions, and I was leaning heavily on strokes gained to kind of help me fill in the remaining players on the U.S. team. And then somebody pointed out to me, and I can't believe I never thought of this, how many events throughout the year are not tracked on strokes gained. Right, I mean, a lot of the fall series are not tracked in strokes gained. A lot of the majors aren't. I think at least three of them. Right, I don't know. Do is the British Open, and I know the U.S. Open's not, maybe they have, PGA Tour has those stats, but don't make them available, but I think I may have to, like, completely redo all my analysis, because I was pushing hard for, like, guys like Bubba and Kuchar, who are up there in the top, like, 8 in strokes gained, but I forget that you're not looking at a complete data set and when you're looking at that. But, I mean, Day's putting season that he's had, I mean, I think Kyle Porter pointed out as well, it's like the greatest putting season since strokes gained became a stat. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean,
it's nuts. It's just how well he putts. And he seems to make one of those 25, 30 footers, like, once every 9 holes.
Yeah. And I just, but that just caused me to wonder out, and that's with any streak, though. How long can something like that last? I mean, that can't be a true reflection of his putting ability. He very well may be the best putter in the game, but, I mean, I think this is like his Tiger 2000 season of putting, and ironically, I don't think Tiger's 2000 season was this good at putting. So, right. I wonder if the you know, weakened ball striking at this point in the season, maybe he's just getting worn down from all the fatigue all season long and all the illnesses and all the things that he's overcome. But, I think you know, I don't know about you. It's the FedEx Cup, even in non Ryder Cup years, kind of gets brushed under the rug. It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of fun to see. It just becomes kind of nauseating is not the right word, but just boring how much the tour presses, like who's sneaking in the top 70 this week. And I just don't really care about any of that, especially like the fact that, you know, it seems to whoever's winning the standings or leading the standings, usually the guy that wins the most recent playoff event. And, but I mean, is there anything that's happening in the playoffs right now that's changing your outlook on the Ryder Cup at this point?
I don't know if it's changing my outlook. It's kind of boosting my confidence with our boy P. Reed just killing it every week. I mean, he T5'd last week rather quietly coming off, especially for being, like you mentioned, that the PGA Tour isn't too keen on kind of pumping him up a little bit just with kind of the decisive person that he is. But he's leading the FedEx Cup. He comes in fifth last week. I mean, I know we got Rory kind of chasing somebody down. It's really intriguing and good TV by itself. But, I mean, with Reed, I think Reed and Spieth, I think, is the biggest no-brainer, like, in everything all year this year. If Davis Love doesn't put them out first every time, it doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, and then Spieth seems to be coming into form. I think I think more this year, especially Ryder Cup year, like you mentioned, the FedEx Cup adds a different kind of scouting, or maybe we pay more attention to who's kind of trending in the right direction at this point than we normally would. Just because the FedEx Cup, like you said, we've had our four majors, we had the Olympics this year. It just seems like there's so much stuff going on, and we want a little bit of a little breather before we get to the Ryder Cup. And we got some compelling golf at least so far through the playoffs with Reed and Rory, and now we got Spieth kind of on the uptick. You mentioned Jason Day kind of falling off, but no one gives a shit about him because he's Australian.
Yeah.
I think it's just kind of given us more of an idea of a better, as the Ryder Cup gets more, turns into a bigger event and we care more about it, the FedEx Cup gives us another kind of little scouting session to talk about picks, to look at who's trending in the right direction, and then kind of give us a better idea of what we should expect at Hazeltine.
Yeah, let me backtrack a bit on this because I'm pulling up Day's recent results, and his recent results are second at the PGA, tied for fourth at the Barclays, and tied for 15th at the Deutsche Bank. So to say that I'm overblowing this would be quite an understatement, I think, actually. So let me just withdraw everything. I just thought it was concerning that I forget who I was following on Twitter that was pointing out that he was just hemorrhaging shots off the tee.
He said that. He was talking about it after the round.
Okay.
He said he had 6 penalties or something like that.
Oh,
he finished at 8 under. So that, take out those 6 penalties that he's, or even half of those, he's in the hunt. He's 14 under. Rory finishes at what, 15 or 16? He's right there. So, I mean, there's definitely something to be said about how loose he was off the tee last week, but still, it's not like he's hanging on the cut line or something like that.
I take it back and I predict that he's going to win the FedEx Cup.
Going
FedEx. All right, so we're sitting here. It's September 7th. Davis Love is going to make his first 3 captain's picks next Monday, the 12th. If you were to guess who his 3 picks are going to be Monday at this point, what would you predict?
I think Ricky's the only lock.
Okay.
I think he's just I know people are worried about the task force, and I think you guys kind of dispel the rumor of the task force, that it's no longer the task force. Now it's a Ryder Cup committee or some shit like that.
Yeah.
But it's not really – I think his involvement with the whole thing is shouldn't be overlooked. Also, his kind of he's at least shown some kind of form recently with how his fade at the Barclays notwithstanding, but he's shown some form and he's right there on the cut. I mean, the Bubba thing is interesting. I think obviously Hazeltine sets up well for him. I don't know if he's gonna get the nod. Just kind of knowing what you said about captains aren't necessarily too high on him. Not sure exactly where he fits, with the exception of maybe Zach Johnson in terms of friends on the Ryder Cup team, and then Ricky, if he makes it too. And then you got your boy Furyk down there. I think Furyk's, if he doesn't get picked on Monday, he's on the outside looking in for sure, just as he kind of falls out of sight, out of mind. So to answer the question, I think it's Ricky. Don't want to disappoint Tron, but I think Kuchar's in.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if it's up to me, I'm looking at J.B. Holmes, Berger, or Ryan Moore. And I think just given Holmes' kind of makeup for the Ryder Cup, obviously we only have a small sample size with him, but I think he sets up well for Hazeltine. I think he's playing well enough at the right time to kind of get this pick right now. If he shows out well this week, I think for sure he's that third pick.
Okay, I think it's good thought process. I'm with you on Fowler. I think Fowler's a lock to be picked on Monday. I think Kuchar is also a lock to be picked. I predicted that the third pick on Monday will be Bubba. That was until I talked to somebody who said that, like you just mentioned briefly, and I wrote about this in the mailbag, that the captains are not too high on Bubba, and at least Love and at least one assistant captain are big on J.B. Holmes, which I'm not following really at all. I'm not even close to understanding what J.B. Holmes gives you that Bubba doesn't. I mean, but yeah, J.B. Holmes is really long off the tee. So is Bubba Watson. And Bubba is a hell of a lot better approaching the green than J.B. Holmes is. And he's better putt. I mean, well, putting's kind of a wash. They're both losing strokes on the green and putting. But and maybe it's such a big personality difference and that, and again, Bubba's 3-8 in the Ryder Cup. I do understand that, but I don't understand. J.B. Holmes is not playing well. He's not had a great season. He is like 33rd amongst Americans in strokes gained for the entire season. I don't understand this at all, other than he played on a winning team in 2008. But I mean, what does J.B. give you that Bubba doesn't? Can you help me out here?
I mean, you mentioned, I think Bubba, I mean, I don't see much difference, like, in personality, really. I don't know who JB kind of vibes with that's necessarily kind of really makes more sense than Bubba. I know, you know, Bubba has his little cliques of people and stuff like that, but who, I mean, JB, he never seems like he's, like, anywhere with anybody. I mean, obviously we don't know anything about him as far as kind of his real life and all that other stuff, but I mean, I think Kuchar and Fowler make sense for chemistry, form reasons. Kuchar more than Fowler in terms of form, but just Fowler just as, I mean, let's face it, it's a TV event. He's a draw. Kuchar makes sense from a teammate standpoint. You can put him with anybody. He might lack pop, but he finds fairways, makes putts with that weird putter grip he has. And then, so, I mean, if it were up to me, if I just had my druthers, I mean, I'd go Fowler, Kuchar, and then just go off the board, go somewhere like, I love Berger. I just think he's an OG. I think he's just money all the time, vibing. Ryan Moore is interesting for me, but he's the same deal as J.B. Holmes. He's kind of like an unknown as far as personality fits and that kind of stuff to kind of the normal golf fan. So obviously these guys, Davis Love, Stricker, Furyk, and Tiger, have a better idea of who these guys are. But, I mean, I don't know why. If we're going to actually change the whole situation around the U.S. Ryder Cup team, why not just shake it up completely? And I think the problem with that whole line of thinking is Davis Love and Furyk and Stricker, they have friends out there, and realistically, this is 1 week out of the year of their lives. Don't get me wrong, it's an important week, but you don't want to alienate a friendship.
Yeah.
Like kind of Clark was playing at before he picked his boy Westwood. So, I mean, I think the idea is great to kind of shake everything up, but the actual doing of what they say is probably not going to happen.
What you just said is, I think, carries a lot more weight than I've realized in the past, and starting to realize more. And this, the friendship thing is a real thing. And I mean, it's like, if I'm, it's not a great parallel, but like, if I'm picking, let's say we throw 12 guys together, say I know 8 people really well, and we want to pick 6-on-6 teams, like for a golf match, chances are I'm going to lean towards a buddy than a guy that I don't know that well. That's just how it goes. And this is somebody that you have built up in your head that you may trust more in a situation than it's deemed worthy. But like for guys like Moore, and for maybe in a lesser sake, Woodland, guys that have been around for a while and have had good seasons but not really breakout seasons, I just have a hard time seeing Love go that deep when those guys aren't sticking out enough. I feel like to pick a guy that hasn't been there before, the guy's got to really stick out and have something that you're missing from that team. And the ironic thing is, with all this talk of task force, all this new blood, all this stuff, there's a very good chance we end up with exactly one rookie on the team, and that's Brooks Koepka, who a guy should have been on the President's Cup team last year, could have even deserved a consideration to be on the Ryder Cup team in 2014, and should have experience in this but doesn't. That's a separate argument. But we're going to end up with all these same guys that, especially if Furyk gets picked, all these same guys have been all these losing teams, and it's like, well, we're going to look back and say, what was the point of all this task force? But, I mean, of that Berger, Woodland, Moore group, I mean, it sounds like you're going DB straight vibe, and I'm on board with that. I locked in him as one of my picks, which I did that erroneously when he was leading the Deutsche Bank Championship, and of course he faded outside like the top 40 after I said that. But I was aware that that could happen, and I'm still sticking with that. I think he fits the mold of a young guy that they need to add to the team. But is there anyone else you're willing to go off the board and pick at this point? And to a certain extent, I'm not locking in all my picks until like, I absolutely have to. Our opinions could change by next week. Right. But as of this moment, is there anyone else that's like sticking out at you?
I mean, if you want me to go super off the board, I was out playing some golf here in Cincinnati a couple weeks ago.
And Brett Wedrick, say it.
Two groups ahead of me. Your boy was out there just bombing it.
I knew as soon as you said Cincinnati who it was going to be.
Oh yeah. Me and Brett play out of the same club, man. This is West Side Till I Die, Cincinnati. And I always take exception with you just slamming my guy. But no, but seriously, I mean, just looking down the list, there's something to be said for Na, I think, a little bit, just out of a playability or play with ability thing for the opponents. But I mean, honestly, I couldn't kind of rationalize doing that. Duffner, love the guy, but I just don't see it. I mean, you get to Berger at 16 on the points list right now. I mean, he makes the most sense as a justifiable reach. And like we mentioned, that friendship element, which I think is, you mentioned too, that it's a little bit underplayed here. I think it's going to be a huge factor, a safety net factor. And I think Jake Nicklaus kind of mentioned these picks, while they're interesting and fun, kind of debate water cooler fodder, they really don't have too much of a actual impact on who's going to win or not. It's like a 5% variance between all these guys, obviously, given how good all of them are. So I think if, like you mentioned, we have Brooks as the lone rookie, why not kind of put out a feeler for some of these younger guys? I don't know if JT, as much as we both love him, I don't know if he kind of has played to deserve that kind of look. But I mean, if we're going to not take all this kind of this talk and actually put it into practice, why not kind of look at some of these guys like a Berger or a JT or a Na, or just some fresh blood a little bit. But I mean, I think that's all wishful thinking. I think we all know kind of where this is going. This is going kind of chalky, old guy, friendship, circle of trust kind of stuff.
Yeah. And one of the guys I talked to, the comment he gave me was like, you know, it's like, if it was up to me, I like Berger a lot, but he's not one of the boys. And I was like, wow, it's just kind of funny to hear that be said, like how much, you know, people are aware of this like click that does matter when it comes time to make picks. But
if you think about it though, what, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago in Rio, the four Americans were down there and Reed was playing by himself outside of that threesome. And he was 8 at the time, and they were talking about maybe he's not one of the boys, and if he doesn't get in on kind of automatic qualification, he's not necessarily a lock. And then obviously he's backed that up in the last few weeks. But a couple weeks ago. That was a real concern concerning Reed.
I would have, first of all, if that would have happened, Reed would have denounced his citizenship, and I would have as well. I would be draped in a European flag rooting for Team Europe if he was not selected as a captain's pick. And I heard some of that chatter as well. I think there should never have been more of a lock in the history of the Ryder Cup captain's picks than Patrick Reed would have been for that spot. I mean, again, the point system's so silly and arbitrary. We're talking about a guy that showed out at the President's Cup, showed out, only guy that is the MVP of that team in 2014, the exact fresh blood we needed. It would have been absolutely asinine if he didn't get a captain's pick. So, yes, I would have been, I would have started a revolution. I would have, hopefully he just, I don't know if he goes start playing for the internationals in the President's Cup or just start his own country. I don't know what he would have done, but. He would have denounced his citizenship, hopefully. But I think this is the part where I think everyone is waiting for me to make the case for JT. And I talked about it again in the mailbag. And I'm going to recycle some things from the mailbag. So just I don't care if you're annoyed by that. I think if it was up to me, short of him winning one of these last two events, and I know it shouldn't be that short-sighted, but I think that kind of confidence could really, you know, as cheesy as it sounds, like light a fire under him, and it could really have an impact on the team. Outside of a win in these final two events, he would not be a captain's pick for me. I still think he needs to be included in the conversation because of how much Davis Love has talked about him in press conferences and how much he's been on his radar. He and Love do have a relationship, and I know that Love, like, really does actually want to pick him. Like, he does want to pick him, and he's kind of waiting. He needs it to be justified at this point. And if he finishes with two top fives or, you know, shows signs in these last two events and no one else really steps up, there is still that chance that he gets that final pick, maybe goes out once or twice in four ball. I'm not guessing he's going to go out three times. I'm not guessing he's going to go out in foursomes. And it kind of just fits that. It wouldn't make a ton of sense if you're looking at the numbers. And he's not really played well enough this year, I don't think, to justify the spot. But those factors that I just mentioned, I think it still could happen. Do you think I'm too far outside the box with that?
No. I mean, if we're going to kind of say the Horschel rule is in effect for Horschel, obviously, so he's kind of in the same boat. I think he tweeted something out earlier this week that short of him winning a tournament, he doesn't really feel that he may have earned his way on the team. I think if you caught JT in an honest moment, he'd say the same thing. Obviously, both of them want to get on the team, play for America, that kind of stuff, just a patriotism fact. And I think Thomas, he kind of spoke to it last year when people asked him if he would rather be on a winning Ryder Cup team or win a major, and it's one of those stupid hypotheticals. But given his background with his dad being a PGA of America pro, kind of his involvement around the Ryder Cup growing up, it's just something that's special to him. I think that's maybe it's not as important as I kind of want to make it out to be, but I think kind of the want to is like a real thing. And I think do you want to take a Scott Piercy or
no.
William McGirt? Do you trust those guys to play better than you do Justin Thomas? Not really. Like, and honestly, not at all, really. So why not? I mean, if we're going to give all this mouth service to this new blood, why don't we? I'm fine taking a Fowler and a Kucher. I think that's kind of just a foregone conclusion at this point. These guys are they're old faces that you know that are recognizable. But with the exception of Brooks, like you mentioned, why not kind of just go deeper? They don't have to play all these sessions. They can play two or three times, and maybe you catch lightning in a bottle with them. Maybe you put Berger with Fowler or with Spieth or with one of those guys from that he kind of came up with. I think Berger and Kepka would be a fun a pairing. I think that would be really cool to see. And just why not just if you're going 11 and 12, why not just make a little reach. As far as JT, I mean, I think I'm with you. I don't know if what you're saying is true. Like Love wants to pick him, JT has to give him a reason to pick him.
Yeah.
So it's kind of put up or shut up time for him. And I think it's not necessarily anything that's to kind of knock him. It's just a factor of how he's played this year, who else is in front of him, and he needs to do something to kind of rationalize it, that Love can rationalize it by picking him.
Yeah, and just back up one of the things you said, Tron has actually indicated, and I don't know the story of this at all, but DB Straight Vibin and BK apparently don't get along. I don't know what the story is. I don't know what the story is there.
That hurts my heart.
I would imagine that also would factor in. If I don't know how severe that relates, that story is or whatnot, but I would imagine that may factor in as well. If it's two guys with a known conflict, although I know that we have two guys already that are automatically qualified for this team that have a known conflict.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
I'm sure you don't. I'm sure you can't figure that one out. But
they both have beards that kind of eerily look similar.
And major champions, I think, as well this year. So.
Oh, this year.
Yeah. So, yeah, of course, we're talking about Danny Willett and Henrik Stenson. But anyway.
Yeah. Those European Eskimo brothers.
If you unsubscribe from this podcast if you haven't figured this out yet, by the way. So subtle. Of the eight guys that are automatic qualifiers for the U.S. team, are there any guys you would like to see ejected from the team? Totally, I'm not setting you up for anything on this question.
I know you want me to say Zach Johnson, and I agree, but I'm not in love with Brent Snedeker at the moment. But yeah, it would be those last two guys on the team. It would be Snedeker and Johnson. ZJ, for reasons you've very verbosely and drawn out completely with kind of his only reason for being on the team, it comes from a tournament from last July. Obviously, it doesn't make any sense. I'm wondering if we're going to be talking in 2 more years if Tiger's going to be screwed over by not getting his points from the Safeway Classic when he racks up next month. but I mean, ZJ, for obvious reasons, I don't think he fits the course well. His form's middling. Snedeker's kind of fallen off of late, but obviously he earned his way on the team. Both of them have done what they needed to do in the system as it's set now, so... those would be the two. Jimmy Walker would be the other one, but I mean, you can't argue with a PGA championship just under a month ago. So, but before that, what has he done? So, I mean, it's 1 week. If he gets hot for 1 week in the beginning of October, great. And love Jimmy Walker, and sure Dustin will too.
Back to what we were just talking about as well, with some of those young guys not being in form, it's easy to look back and forget how bad Patrick Reed's form was going into the 2014 Ryder Cup, you know? And like, it really... Form can change so fast, and it really is just, even with a guy that doesn't have good stats, but leading up into it, and I think it's too much is made out of, and I say it sometimes too, like the word fire and passion and that stuff, but certain guys it just matters to more. And again, that's a cheesy cliche that, like, I hate that in football, like, oh, he just wanted it more than the other guy, but I do think there is something to that when it comes to this event. The guys that really thrive in this kind of environment, and I don't know. Have you ever, like, horrible comparisons, but like, have you ever played like team golf, even if like in like a weekend Ryder Cup event or something? How much fun is that, and how much more competitive and more seriously do you take it? You know, when you got a teammate and you have a partner, I just think that there is something to it. And overall, I think your best stroke play players are going to be your best match play players outside of Furyk. But that being said, I didn't even have a question with all that, but I'm transitioning it into this. Do you think we're safe from Furyk at this point?
I want to think yes, just because he floundered recently and didn't get into this week's tournament. I think just the overwhelming kind of the push for him to be on was kind of predicated upon the fact that he would have at least played up to the point where he makes the picks. And the fact that he kind of just fell short, fell flat on his face last week, really, knowing he needed a good showing, I don't think it was the death knell for him, but... It should be. I mean, he's a captain's pick. We've all know how terrible he is record-wise. There's the experience factor, but then I think you guys were talking about this on one of your earlier podcasts. What experience do you want? Do you want experience of a guy who sucks in the Ryder Cup? I mean, obviously, he had that press conference after the Phil versus Tom Watson thing where he said, if we would have figured this shit out a long time ago, we would have been doing better or something. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure the guy cares. I think he'll be a good captain, a good vice captain, all that other stuff, but he chokes. He chokes in Ryder Cups. He doesn't play well. And I know there's the other side out there who says kind of there's no real good hard numbers as far as maybe he got outplayed by somebody who shot 64 that day, but they don't shoot 64 every time you go out. So win some, and then you'll have a better kind of argument, at least for him. But I think to answer the question, I think we're coming out of the woods on the Jim Furyk as a captain's pick thing, which could all just kind of go horribly wrong on Monday when he's already on the team. We don't have to worry about Because there's zero chance he gets picked with that fourth pick. There's no way they can save that pick for somebody who hasn't played in a month.
Yeah. I it makes me upset with the people that were willing to put him on the team, like, after the Travelers. Like, I know it shouldn't, but just this whole attitude of, like, just get over it. Put him on the team. He's going to be on it. It's like he didn't even play that badly over this last month to drop off of it. Like, that's how people were willing to give away a spot to him. And it's even guys that I'm friends with, they're like, well, now Love's got his justification for putting him on the team. It's like, come on, I think Davis, I mean, I've been pretty hard on Love this whole process, and he hasn't even made any of his picks yet. But I think he's capable of putting more thought into it than that. I honestly can't make a case for him at all, other than the fact that he's a Hall of Fame player and always going to be one of the best golfers in the world. I guess that part is a pretty good case, but the fact that you played in 9 of these and you have a losing record in 8 of them, meaning you have been a negative team member 8 out of 9 times you've been on this. I don't know how many times you have to fail before you stop doing that. Like, there's a reason we stopped asking, like, Scott Verplank back on the team, and J.J. Henry only played well. Like, these guys fail, and then they're gone, all right? Like, I know that comparing their stroke play careers are much different, but, it just makes me so frustrated. And if it – I'm still going to revolt. Part of me likes to think that I've had an influence on this, and I'm only kind of kidding when I say that, but I think the – just riling people up at least a little bit and getting the chatter out there that people are sick of seeing this has to have an impact, at least at some level. I'm really not literally saying that I'm impacting the captain's picks, but enough people agree out there. And the only people that were making, like, saying, oh, I think you should have a pick, they would, like, toss in a joke at the end, like, I'm also European and I want to see him on the team. Right. So,
yeah, I mean, there were a handful of people, I think, who kind of pushed back against him. The thing that the bizarre thing about the whole thing is how they always point to the T2 at Oakmont. It's the same deal with Zach Johnson making the team. That T2 at Oakmont was huge in getting Furyk kind of in that conversation, and it doesn't necessarily kind of even project anywhere near what's going to be happening at the end of September, beginning of October.
Right.
But it's just that whole argument. He's obviously one of the. I mean, I don't know. He's a Hall of Famer, right? He's a great player. He's always going to be a great player. It's just a matter of, I mean, people don't play well at tournaments. Martin Keimer can't make the cut at Augusta. Doesn't mean he's not a great player. It just means there's one event that he doesn't play well in. Jim Furyk does not perform well in the Ryder Cup. It's I don't even know if it's an opinion now, if it's much as it's a fact.
Fact. You said it, and that's what, another thing that just frustrates the hell out of me is, like, people saying, yeah, T2 at the U.S. Open and shot a 58. It's like, okay, you can't just, like, if there's ever an event, you can't just, like, cherry-pick the good results. Okay, Justin Thomas finished T3 at the Players Championship and shot 62 the final round of that Travelers Championship. Who is including that in their take for why Justin Thomas should be on this team? Nobody, not even me, the biggest Thomas homer you could find, so... all right, let's move on a little bit from Furyk and picks, and let's talk pairings. First of all, do you get deep into pairings at all? Do you like to mix and match them?
I mean, not especially. I mean, I think there's some obvious ones, and then it's just kind of like a check and see. I think obviously you got Spieth and Reed is the go-to. Phil and anybody I think works. And then, I mean, I don't go nuts with the exception of kind of what happened with Tom Watson. Just common sense, it's not, these guys are good, and I think you give them a little bit more of, hear Azinger talk about it constantly, just everything he talks about is these guys owned the team, they ran the team, it was their team, they took pride in it. Let them kind of tell you who they're comfortable playing with, and then let them go. The pod system just makes sense. There's a reason why, like, Europe has their pod system. They get guys from England who play with guys from England. You get guys from Spain who play with other guys from Spain. It just makes sense. Common people you're comfortable with allow you to play better golf, and especially when the people you're playing with are good golfers. It's kind of the same deal as when you play with a shitty golfer, you kind of play a little shittier just because you're, like, watching this guy hack it around. And that obviously isn't going to happen at the Ryder Cup with world-class players, but there is something to be said for being comfortable with who you're playing with. And I think Hal Sutton learned that the hard way. Same thing with Tom Watson. Just let these guys kind of give, hey, I'm Patrick Reed, I'm comfortable playing with Spieth, I'm comfortable playing with Snedeker, whatever it may be. Just give them, let them give you a couple guys, and then just kind of keep it simple.
For some reason, I get the feeling that Spieth doesn't like playing with Reed that much. Do you get that at all?
I love, 2 years ago, or it might have been the President's Cup, but they're talking about Patrick, and they're asking Spieth about things working their dynamic, and it's, I don't give putts, and I just, if someone like looks at me, I look at Patrick, and Patrick shakes his head no, and I say no, that's no good, or something like that. But I think Reed's like fire and intensity kind of rubs Spieth a little wrong, kind of just outwardly. Yeah. Obviously, when they're kind of like in the mix and everything, Spieth's super dialed in and super fired up about it, as we saw the last couple times they've been paired together in Ryder Cups or President's Cups, but I think Spieth loves playing with Reed on the course. I don't think he likes answering the questions about playing with Reed.
Yeah.
And having to explain, like, how he can kind of, like, channel that maybe, like, inner scumbag kind of thing, just because it's bad for the brand.
Well, he needs a if there's ever an event they need the killer instinct, I think it's this
right.
one. But,
yeah. I think Spieth has it. I just think
he's yeah.
less comfortable kind of flaunting it than Reed is.
If you're, let's say the foursomes of the, and I'm stealing this straight from my mailbag, so I've already answered this. But if you're sending foursomes out the first match on Friday morning, who are you pairing? Who's sitting? What order are you going? Have you thought it through that to that level? And if not, we're going to make you live do it on the air anyways. Okay. So,
well, I'm definitely sending out Jimmy Walker and Dustin Johnson first. I think you got to start with Spieth and Reed every time. If they want to go out first, and I think. I think Reed's talked about it this past week since his win. He likes going out first and setting a tone. I think those two are just. I think that's why it was. He was on Morning Drive and he said something like, "If it's not broke, don't fix it. Put me and Jordan out. We'll get some momentum. We'll rile the crowd up, or I'll rile the crowd up. Whatever you want to say." I think that works. Obviously, I think Koepka.
Can I pause you for a second? Yeah. Just because I put this tweet in my mailbag as well, but said. Kyle Porter tweeted something, a quote that was asked, like somebody, Reed was asked what he has in store for the Ryder Cup, and he's like, I can't say. And like, he has like a surprise in store. What is he going to do? I'm nervous. I'm so excited. I'm nervous. What's he going to do?
I think he's going to release a live bald eagle on the first tee. Kessler or whatever, his caddy is going to come from underneath those awesome grandstands they have on one, and just maybe like how people do doves at their wedding. He'll have like baby eagles just take flight. It'll be awesome. People go nuts, and then until they go and pick up some kind of like dog or something nearby,
he's gonna come out to an intro song, isn't he?
Like
he's
Hulk Hogan, I'm a Real American.
Just a marching band coming through out of the tunnel. Like how awesome would that be? He comes out like a majorette, taking one of his golf clubs, twirling it yes. in the air.
And have like a World War II or a Civil War reenactment. Drummer boy out in front of him or something.
Oh my god, he has something planned. I love it. He's got something and it's gonna come out. All right, so that's your first pairing. Who's two?
I have no idea. DJ and Phil.
Okay.
Just because I know they play those Tuesday games occasionally, and I don't think if we're talking foursomes here, I mean, there's something to be said for pairing like Zach Johnson with a Koepka or probably Zach Johnson and Jimmy Walker look like they just make sense on their faces. Just a guy who hits it far, a guy who supposedly wedges it well, or at least he did last year at St. Andrews. So I think Walker, Zach Johnson, Phil, DJ, Spieth, Reed, and that kind of just what that leaves Brooks and Snedz. Yeah, I mean, I'm not in love with that one, but I think Brooks gets paired with a Fowler, assuming there's no other kind of
conflicts there.
some gripes with Florida State cleat chasers that were good. I just completely projected that. I have no idea if that's what Tron's talking about, but the only thing I know is they went to Florida State. So
that's yeah. That. I'm assuming it has something to do with that as well. That's fair, but I think I'm looking at guys that I don't want playing four ball. And so I penciled in Snedz and ZJ together. They played together, I think, once in 2012 and one, if I remember right. I could be. No, you know, I don't think they did play together in 2012. But anyways, ZJ went 2-0 at Medina, and I'm cherry-picking that stat and ignoring the two away Ryder Cup teams that he played on where he didn't fare so well in foursomes. But I think if you got those two on the team, you're probably sending them out there in foursomes and not four ball. and you're letting your bombers and your birdie guys go out in four ball. Maybe I'm misinterpreting the strategy of that, but I think, you know, in case they do take flyer on Berger or anyone like that for those final spots, I think they're sending them out four ball. There's just more pressure, I think, that comes in foursomes. If there's ever a time when experience pays off, it may be in foursomes. I don't know. So I'm sending them out last, and I'm going Reed Spieth first as well. Then I threw Koepka and DJ together. I think those are guys I want to rely on. Those are guys I want playing potentially four matches if they're playing well, and I'm planning on playing them three. And then Phil and Fowler, I think, makes a lot of sense to play together as well. They're paired together on Tuesdays a lot. And so that would leave, like, Kuchar, Bubba, and Walker, and then whoever that final pick is going to be. Who am I leaving off here? I'm forgetting somebody. If I'm giving it to Kuchar, Bubba, Fowler, that final guy, whoever that final guy is going to play in your four ball, I think so, and probably going to be JB Holmes from what it sounds like. So, my four I'm riding with for planning on at minimum three, and if playing well, four. Reed, Spieth, Koepka, DJ. Phil, I don't think wants to play four matches. I think he'll play three. I'm fine seeing him out there for three, and then those remaining five guys I'm filling in, or remaining seven guys I'm filling in with, playing the hot hands as it goes along. So,
yeah, I think you got to ride your horses, like you mentioned there with DJ, Spieth, Reed. Phil, I think Phil will be a three guy, and then he'll sit out a foursomes match just because. I mean, I know Phil, he cares and all that other stuff, but I mean, do we really trust Phil when you're playing alternate shot with Phil Mickelson if he's going to be anywhere on the planet? I mean, he hit a ball like down a subdivision during the PGA. He hit it like off the course and like down a side street that Gary McCord used to drive down. And it's fun to watch and it's really enthralling, but I don't know if I'm comfortable being the guy who has to hit Phil's second shot.
I don't have his foursomes record in front of me, but I feel like he's played a lot, and that could be one of his weaknesses. He's got not a great team record at all in the Ryder Cup, so maybe I'm making a mistake counting him in for four ball. But he's going to be boisterous, and he's going to want to play. And he's surprised me. He's second on tour this year in strokes gained putting. Yeah. Like, he has really putted his ass off this year. So,
and the thing you remember most about the putt he missed was Vaughn Taylor at Pebble. He missed a 6-footer. He had to get up and down from off the front of the green.
Yeah,
but he's putted his brains out every other week.
I don't even think that counts the British Open in those strokes gained stats. So. Last question I'll let you off on. What if you could change anything about the current system, what would you change? Points, qualifying, number of picks, anything?
I think it should either be completely, this is going to be completely off the map, so just I have no real thought process, I'm just going to talk it through. It should be 12 automatic qualifiers or 12 just pick them. If we want to do automatic qualifiers, just if you make the team, you make the team. It's merit-based. This is a terrible take. I have no reason for this. Or just play like the good old boys network. Have Davis Love pick his favorite guys. And I mean, you'll get the camaraderie. You might not get like the best, hottest players, but there'll be some kind of pressure in terms of getting the players who are playing the best. So I think the point system or some kind of system will have to be kind of installed to have some kind of backup or rationalization thing. But why not just simplify the point system? And now, don't at me for that.
No one's left listening. This is like an hour in. So, I think. I don't have a great answer other than I think like I actually would split your idea in half. I'd say six automatic, and the six automatic should just be like a cinch. There should be no debate on it. Like I think there's two guys on the team that I wouldn't have on my team that automatically qualified. I think Love would have taken ZJ anyways. I don't think he would have taken Sneds. And I just don't think a captain should be saddled with, you know, eight guys that he didn't necessarily pick. I mean, I don't think anyone can qualm with anyone that, like, finished in the top six. And so I just would like a better measure that shows your consistency at beating your peers, right? And, you know, having a pretty mediocre season and then winning a major that gets you basically three times as many points, that's not the best system for qualification, if you ask me. And I just don't think it identifies the best players. So I'd rather have it be six automatic that just like more of a I don't know if strokes gained is the answer, because like I said, there's some terms that don't even measure it, but something that shows that consistency over the course of a year, much better than, you know, points from the 2015 Masters that was all like, you know, 18 months ago. So that's the direction I would go. I do like the transition they've made. I think they're stepping in the right direction with at least saving one of the picks off the Tour Championship, having four captains' picks, et cetera. So it's not completely broken my mind, but I think it could be done better, of course. So
yeah, I think the same thing could be said for Europe too, with their points list and all the other stuff. How Russell Knox got left off. I mean, but then what else will we talk about and complain about?
Exactly.
For a year and a half leading up to it.
Yeah, and we basically bypassed talking anything Europe, which is fine. I'm fine right. with that. So yep. we're flying the American flag here. So, all right, Chris Chaney, kept you for an hour. Thank you so much for your time. Where can we find your stuff?
So swingbyswinggolf.swingbyswing.com is the site I run, and on Twitter at @wrong_fairway.
We know where to find you, and we will be, I'm sure you'll be tweeting a live storm during the Ryder Cup. And thanks for giving us an hour. And we'll get. I'm expecting to see some fire breathing from you as well when the picks actually do come through next week. So
I won't let you down, Sully.
Until next time, later, buddy.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes,
Johnny. That's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most.
Expect